Okay, so this morning I'm going to be preaching to the converted about about the unreasonable effectiveness of martingales, but so you know, as I see, the probabilists here are in the majority and combinatorialists in the minority, but martingales are used a lot by both, but in combinatorics they're largely used for their concentration properties, so I want to emphasize other properties that are still used in useful for combinatorial type problems. So here are three questions I want to address today. The first, take a deregular graph and perform bond percolation on it with p equals 1 over d minus 1. So here you can think of d equals 3 or d up to its largest value n minus 1, but I want to look in this critical regime where so p, that's why p is 1 over the degree, and we'll focus just on the size of the largest component and ask, is this component of order n to the 2/3? By the way, I'll appreciate, especially after the talk, more references for things that are known, things that are published. So certainly this is a classical Erdős-Reni, this is a classical result for the Erdős-Reni graph, which is just the case d equals n minus 1 of this. But, yes? No, this is C1. This is not expected cluster of one vertex. This is the largest cluster. Okay? So C1 is the largest cluster, right? So it's n to the 1/3 if you're doing a cluster of one vertex. here's the second question. Take an infinite graph and consider a simple random walk on it. And we'll see a finite version of this. And look at the probability of going in p steps from x to y. Right? We want to bound this by constant over root t. This is the behavior just on the integers. And the question is that somehow the extreme case? And the answer to this one is known. And here's the third question. For orientation, start with simple random walk on the hypercube. All vertices of the hypercube are the same, but start at the uniform vertex, which is the stationary distribution for the random walk, and start walking. Well, it's very clear that for a long time, say if we're in k dimensions, certainly for t less than k over 4, and the constants here can be improved, for a long time, the walk escapes at a linear speed from its starting point. Right, because as long as less than a quarter of the coordinates have moved, then when you come to make the next move, three quarters of the coordinates at least are still zero. Say you started from all zeros. So after less than k over 4 steps, 3/4 of the coordinates are still zero. So in every step, you have at least probability 3/4 of moving away from the all zeros, only probability 1/4 of moving towards it. So you have a drift of at least 1/2 for this time. So the walk escapes at a positive speed from its starting point. But this is in the natural graph metric on the hypercube, which is exactly the L1 metric. Here's the question, can you build any Markov chain but where the states are points in L2, which has this behavior? What about random walk on a tree? We're all used to random walk on a tree going, say a regular tree, random walk on a regular tree goes at the linear speed from the starting point, but that's when you do the infinite tree. Suppose you're restricted to do finite trees. Well, still true if you start from the root, but if you start from a uniform vertex, or from a vertex chosen according to the stationary distribution. So in all these questions, somehow the best answers we know come from looking at suitable martingales, which aren't completely evident in the statement of the problem. So, And in all of these, there are still interesting open problems that are refinements of these kind of basic questions. So in today's talk, I've been asked to give a survey type talk, but instead of giving a survey where we mention a lot of state-of-the-art results, I'm going to go the other way and just focus on the technique and do simple cases, which and you can read about finer things later. So here's a basic simple estimate that will be used actually in two of those three problems. So consider so we just want to bound the probability that Martingale stays positive for a long time for k steps. And so we need something about this Martingale. So it's going to start at 1. And and it's always non-negative. So the question is whether it stays actually positive. Now, we need two assumptions here. One is that the Martingale keeps changing. So at step t, the variance of the next step is at least some sigma squared. And the other thing is that this changing is not due to just the possibility of making a huge jump into the stratosphere. So that's controlled this way, that for large h, and I'll be more specific, in the proof, when you first cross H, when you first cross size H, you don't go far beyond. So, for instance, if you know that when you first cross H, you're bounded by some constant times H, that's good enough. But all you need is a bound in the second moment. So when you first cross H, if it was simple random walk, it would be exactly at H squared. What we want is that the square would be at h squared. Here we want that the expected square will be bounded by some dh squared. Okay, and under these assumptions, we get the same kind of estimate as for simple random walk, namely the probability decays like a constant over square root of k, and here the constant is explicit in terms of these hypotheses d, or this data d and sigma. Okay, so let's go through the proof of this. So the probability that the Martingale stops at time tau h above h, so here's the picture. We start at 1. There's a threshold of h that we will determine later, and we're interested in the Martingale up to time k, and we want to know where it exits this rectangle. So maybe it exits on the upper side, so that means that it's bigger than h there. And the probability of this will be bounded by 1 over h, just by optional stopping. Now, look at this process, and a little more time we could motivate why we want to look at this, but I'll just look at it, and the variance assumption means that this process is a sub-Martingale, has increasing expectations whenever MT is positive, right? Because this part, the middle part, is a Martingale, and we assume that the expectation of MT squared goes up by sigma squared, so that balances this, or goes up by at least sigma squared. So we have this increasing or sub-Martingale property. And then, just by optional stopping, we compare the starting value, which is bigger than minus h, it's just 1 minus h, to the ending value. What's the expectation at the end? Well, this part of yt, the first part, is is always non-positive, it's always bounded by zero, except when we cross the threshold h, right? Because we're subtracting mt squared, we're subtracting hmt. So the only possibility for this to become positive is if we're really exiting through this upper boundary. So that's this probability here. And in that case, what can we say about the conditional expectation of the first part here? Well, our assumption is that the conditional expectation of mt squared is bounded by dh squared. And of course, if we're exiting from the top part, then hmt is going to be at least h squared. So we get this upper bound. And sigma squared t we replace by sigma squared expectation of tau h. So just moving things around and remembering here, if we take from this dh squared minus h squared, if we take a factor h out, we get the expression upstairs here. So it means that all of this is bounded by just dh minus h. So we get that sigma squared expectation of tau h is bounded by dh. So we're almost done with this lemma. So we just check that expectation of tau h is bounded by dh over sigma squared. So this is just the elementary thing. We start at 1, and and we're bounding the expectation of exiting at one of these endpoints is at most dh over sigma squared. So you're all familiar for this kind of thing for simple random walk, and this is just the simple extension of that. Now we put this together. So what's the probability we're interested in, that it stays positive until time k? Well, that could happen in two ways. Either we exit from the upper boundary, or we exit from this right boundary, that is, it didn't hit the bottom. This probability here, we're already bounded by 1 over h. That was one application of Markov inequality in the previous slide. And the probability tau h greater k, another application of Markov inequality, remembering this bound on the expectation, gives you dh over k sigma squared. Now you just optimize in h. Just choose the h to optimize this expression, and we get the stated bound. Okay, so it's basically to remember that when you have a bound on the overshoot and a lower bound on the variance, then the probabilities behave like for a simple random walk. So let's look at the deregular graph on n vertices. And again, you could concentrate on case d equals 3, or you could take the case d equals n minus 1, which would be the classical random graph. And in this generality, when you do percolation with this parameter, p equals 1 over d minus 1, the cluster might be very small. Your graph could just be a cycle that's slightly enhanced, like a ladder. So this is only going to be an upper bound, but it is sharp in various cases. At least the order of the dependence on n is sharp. So n to the 2/3 is the right order of the largest component. It's interesting that historically for the random graph, this was the harder part that took longer to prove. Again, emphasize historically. So if you look at the case d equals n minus 1, Erdős and Reni pointed out the double jump in 1960 where let me just do the quick detour. So they were looking at the case d equals n and this graph gnp. So n vertices, probability of edges is p, and for p, which is and let's take p equals 1 over n, or p equals c over n, for c less than 1, the order of the largest component is some constant log n. For c bigger than 1, it's order n. And for c equals 1, they already wrote the number, the n to the 2/3, but they didn't really prove it. So there is a proof, even that is not really complete, There is a proof in their paper of a lower bound n to the 2/3 by counting trees, and that that's basically right. But the upper bound they never really proved, and it took until the work of Lovas in the 80s and completed by Wuchak and others in the 90s to get that the order of magnitude was n to the 2/3, and the initial arguments were quite hard. By now, we have easier ways to do this, and as you'll see, it seems now that the upper bound is the easier in this, but of course you could try and sharpen the upper bound. So actually with a more, slightly more careful analysis and using more independence. So if you're in the classical random graph case, or d is constant, so you're doing the random three regular graph, so not an arbitrary three regular graph, but a random one, then the estimate can be improved. So the probability, if you take the largest cluster, divide by n to the 2/3, the tails of this are sub-Gaussians, they behave like e to the minus constant a cubed. This kind of thing you could easily guess if you know the Aldous's connection between the random graph and excursions of a Brownian motion with quadratic drift. But, of course, from Aldous's theorem, you can never actually prove such an estimate because you can't exchange the limits. So a large deviation estimate doesn't survive under weak limits. And yes. Well. Yes. Sorry. Thank you. So. This is a very sloppy writing. Sorry. What I meant is, right? You divide by n to the 2/3, and you look at the expectation of this, and the question is, of course, not if it's finite, but whether it's uniformly bounded. So, sorry about this one. So, right, because this tells you, if you divide by n to the 2/3, this tells you that has first moment and all moments up to 3/2, but it doesn't tell you anything better than that. So, in the classical random graph case, we know all moments and more still. Again, I said with the martingale approach, we easily get this bound, which is the right order. On the other hand, you can see what can be done with other approaches. It's still a challenge even to show all moments are finite, and you can find the recent paper of Svante Jansson and Spencer that just considers finite moment for the classical random graph case. So, yes. Right. I'm not saying that at all. So I'm saying so what I mean, thank you. So what I mean by the critical window is for it's a sub comment of the previous comment. So it does occur at 1/d-1, right, for the d equals n minus 1 or for the random d regular graph. So this really refers to this previous remark. Thank you. Well, let's say no. Again, one has to. There is. I'm not sure what it means to say for that it decays like that for small values, because small is up to 5 or what? So because there's no two asymptotic regimes here, so there is a limit. So the point is really that there is a limiting distribution, and that limiting distribution holds out to the far tails. So that's yes. Huh. Okay, now I understand. So A is really less than 1, so you're asking for small...
Yeah, I think that you should, we can sort of put these two odds together and multiply.
Right, but then... Okay, I understand. But then, okay, for A really small, then the question becomes really to understand the asymptotics of probability less than this, and not... So there is an interesting lower tail, but that comes from asking the probability of this less than a n to the 2/3 and letting a go to 0 and looking at that asymptotics. Okay, we'll continue this.
I have a way to formulate.
Okay. We have a week to understand that. Okay, so what I want to point out is here just the easy thing that the n to the 2/3 bound, upper bound, can be obtained just from the bounding from above by a critical process. And so you need more understanding of the random graph and more independence just to refine this basic bound. So let's just see the basic bound. So let me see. Okay. So first, so then I want to first really do it without using more information on the graph. Where's there? I just want to erase some stuff for a minute. So, because the degrees are d, let's make d equal 3, then right, we can... So, when we do percolation on this graph, it's naturally bounded by a percolation on a d array, on a d regular tree, which... So the cluster, if we start from vertex V and look at its cluster, it's easy to see that the size of this cluster is bounded by the size of percolation on a deregular tree, because we have a deregular graph if every time when examining the percolation, if every vertex we reach is new, that's only going to give us a bigger cluster. But I want to compare to a d array tree rather than a d regular tree, so I'm going to start the process from two neighboring vertices, and then from each one the process, the percolation, can be compared to one on a d minus one array tree. So let's see that in terms of this exploration process. So on a this exploration process in the context of the random graph was invented several times. I think the first explicit reference I know is Martin Leff in 1986, and then reinvented by Karp in 1990. In the context of the tree, maybe in different language, goes back even further. So in all these contexts, at time t equals 0, we have one vertex active, all other vertices neutral, and we want to explore the component of this vertex. So at each time, we look at the set of active vertices. If it's not empty, then the first active vertex is explored, means that we take this active vertex, so say, right, so suppose now these are the set of active vertices. We take one of them, say this one, and explore, ask how many of its neighbors are open, and then we remove this vertex from the active set and add its neighbors, the ones that are connected to it, to the active set. So each time the active set, each step, it goes down by one because we're exploring one vertex, and it goes up by a random quantity, which is the number of possible new neighbors that this vertex has. On the tree case, this is binomial d minus 1, 1 over d minus 1. On the graph, it's always stochastically dominated by this. And except, right, if we were to start from a single vertex and explore it, the first step, it has d neighbors. That's why we modify it a little bit and look actually look at the exploration from two neighbors, and we don't explore from one neighbor to the other. So that's just for controlling this first step. Well, so you see that this is a martingale, and it's just going to satisfy the hypothesis. The variance is bounded below. The smallest case is in the case d equals 3, and then it's 2/3. And the overshoots for a binomial random walk are very well controlled. You could take, in fact, any constant capital D, which is bigger than 1, and things work. So, because if you're doing a walk with binomial increments, and you ask when this random walk exceeds a level H, how far could it go? Well, even if you condition on where you were right before the last jump, then you're doing a binomial step. And if you have a binomial variable, you condition it to be bigger than some threshold, then you're just performing independent experiments, and you're restricting them to have more than some number L of successes. Well, after you've had L successes, the remaining experiments are just independent with the original P. So your overshoot here is always stochastically bounded by just the original binomial variable. So in fact, here you can in this case, you have an additive bound that the location after the last jump is bounded by H plus a binomial. So it's very easy to control the second moment. And here, just so we're doing a generous overestimate, saying that the second moment when you jump over H is bounded by dH squared with this d. And then, okay, so plugging to the general bound, we see, because this is a martingale, again, observe that the length of time this martingale stays positive is exactly the size of the component of the vertex V, because every time we explore one vertex, so it's easy to see by induction that all vertices in the component of V will indeed be explored. So the only time this martingale will reach zero is when they are all explored. So the size of the component is exactly the number of steps that this martingale MT is positive. So the probability that the component has size bigger than K is exactly the probability that the martingale stays positive for the first K steps. And with these values, we get this bound of 2 over root K. Of course, here on the tree, this is just a critical branching process. So you can get this type of bound in many ways from the generating functions too. The point is that this seems to be the right technique to use if you want to get the finer results for this model. Okay. Now going back to the graph case, what's the probability that the component of the graph is bigger than K? Well, a crude uprest, crude bound is saying, well, look at these two processes from the two neighbors and bound them by the three processes. So that's why we have this factor of 2 here. And if this is going to be, this component is bigger than K, then the components on the tree, at least one of them has to be bigger than K over 2. So we get this bound, upper bound, which is at most 6 over root K. So now let's finish the story. Let nk be the number of vertices in the graph that have their component of size bigger than k. All right. See, one bracket fell down here. The expectation of nk is just, because all vertices, the analysis from before, right, so in the random graph case, we have equality. In general, we just have the expectation of nk is just the sum of this. So it's bounded by n times this probability for the worst vertex, but we control this probability for every vertex as 6 over root k. So if you change this to an inequality, then it's right. The expectation of nk is bounded by 6n over root k. And because for every vertex, we bounded this probability by 6 over root k. So the probability that the component size is bigger than k, well, that just means that the number of these vertices with big components has to be bigger than k. That's bounded by expectation of nk over k, so we get just 6n over k to the 3 halves. So to just putting k, which is a n to the 2 thirds, you see that you get a bound here of 6 over a to the 2 thirds. So really, very easy access just to see why the 2 thirds comes up. It's now to get anything finer, it seems we need to know something better than just, well, it's clear we need to know something better than just bounding by the critical branching process. Namely, after the process has gone for n to the 2 thirds steps, then it's controlled by a subcritical branching process, or instead of a martingale, we get a super martingale with a substantial drift downwards. And if you then use that drift, you can get you can easily get the better bounds. So just to say, which is one sentence, where does the e to the minus a cubed come from? So look at the component of a single vertex and ask, what's the chance that this component will be larger than a n to the 2 thirds, and think of a now as a large constant. So take h, which is order n to the 1 third. So first the process has to reach this boundary,